Coming up today, Sky bans your pornography access, unless you told it not to already. Plus, GCHQ has been scooping up emails of journalists from the UK in a move that caused us, journalists in the UK, to be very cross indeed. Plus, it's good news if you're a Mars watcher, as the ill-fated British Beagle 2 lander has been found on the surface of the Red Planet over 10 years since it was presumed dead. All that and more coming up on my very last ever Wired.co.uk podcast, Boo! And indeed, who? This is the Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and interesting from science and tech to pornography bans and interplanetary crash lands. For the very last time, I'm your host, Nate Langson, and for just two more days, I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Leah Clark.
And I'm Katie Collins.
And I'm sad. I could drown in the pool of tears that I am causing to rain upon this parade.
And you'll take us down with it, probably.
Yes, you can drown in my tears. I mean, please don't. It's technically an HR violation.
Yes.
Because it would be my fault.
And then Murder. There would be no Wired at all.
Well, there would not be a Wired in its present sounding form. I'm so sad. I really am. It kind of feels like, you know that feeling when you give birth and then you give one of your children to someone else?
Yes.
You know?
I mean, I don't actually, but I can imagine.
Well, for you, imagine it's a cheese and you haven't finished eating it. You love the cheese and you've given it to somebody else to eat. It's kind of like that, only with less swallowing. And
you can listen to this every week as well as an added torture.
You can still taste the cheese.
I'm going to listen to the podcast every week because from now on, this show, including the editing of last week's and this week's show, being handled, of course, by my two dear colleagues, Katie and Liat, who are taking over Fort Wired. .co.uk at least, and the podcast for the foreseeable future. I think this is an exciting time. I've had 203, if we include this one, amazing episodes. I'm sad to leave, and I've been very flattered by other people who have written in to say that they're going to be sad that I'm leaving.
Mm. Well, as you say, it's a very exciting time for you in many ways, but it's very, very sad for us, and we will miss you so much.
Yes, you taught us everything we know, and you will come back on and
I quite literally
visit,
taught you
yes.
how to do a podcast,
you
I suppose.
You literally did.
Yeah.
In the
well,
last 2 weeks.
You are, of course, extremely right to be sad. It's a great shame that I'm leaving, but who knows? Maybe I'll be back. Actually, I already am. I've got a new podcast, but you can Google that. Hey, self-promotion.
Stop promoting it every week.
Why not? Okay, well, anyway, we're going to come back to me apparently in a bit because Liat and Katie wanted to do a second half of the show doing something a bit fun around my last day. So that is coming up in the second half in the form of a quiz. It's like, never mind the Buzzcocks, only without everyone involved in that show. But first, the news. Liat, GCHQ pulled out a figurative spade and scooped up all of our emails to put it in their giant sack of acquired words.
Yes, I think Wired might have escaped the scooping.
Well, this is at least according to several reports that we had. I think The Guardian revealed it initially. Yes, UK and US journalists have had their words taken in by the GCHQ vacuum cleaner of monitoring.
Yeah, according to the Snowden leaks, to name a few, the BBC, The Guardian, Reuters, New York Times, Le Monde, The Sun, and The Washington Post had their sent and received emails swiped by GCHQ, including conversations between reporters and editors. As far as we know, no one was targeted specifically. They didn't have a gripe with one particular journalist.
No, but I have to say, in this note, I did see that the communications, like the emails, were available to anyone at GCHQ that had clearance on their intranet.
Yeah, well, no, clearance for this on
yes, but still... I do not trust the oversight here.
No, I mean, I don't think anybody does. I think it's the whole thing is ridiculous. I say they don't target specific journalists, but they've got a real gripe with investigative journalists, which, as we know, are very important to, you know, uncovering some of the biggest corruption cases in government in history. It's and we have a lot to thank them for. But GCHQ does not like investigative journalists from the information Snowden gleaned.
This kind of puts investigative journalists in the same column as terrorists.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because these snooping what they're doing this for is to monitor, and there's a quote here, people who are a potential threat to security, and that lumps together terrorists, and I think fair dues, with hackers, not necessarily fair dues at all, and investigative journalists who are doing something, generally speaking, for the public good.
Yeah, well,
and for the benefit of everybody. So this just seems incredibly bad. I can't say the word I was going to say because I'd have to beep it out.
That's where GCHQ would beg to differ with you.
I bet they would.
Because they would argue that what, and they call, they refer to investigative journalists in inverted commas as if they're like a made up thing. Mm-hmm. They call themselves investigative journalists. They lump them into parties that are threatening our national security. So they focused on those who specialize in defense related exposés, either for profit or what they deem to be of the public interest. All classes of journalists, and this is a direct quote from reports that Snowden swiped, and reporters may try either a formal approach or an informal approach, possibly with off-duty personnel, in their attempts to gain official information to which they are not entitled.
What about this information, their emails, to which GCHQ is not entitled?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, how could they possibly know what emails to swipe that will be a threat to national security? They're just going for investigative... papers that do big investigative exposés.
And clearly as well, as well as targeting journalists here, they're targeting any sources that the journalists may be getting in touch with. So whistleblowers and, you know, other people that may be reporting into these journalists, they know.
I need to climb into the clothes of Beelzebub's personal assistant devil's advocate here. But I sort of do get, not support, but get what they mean by this.
How could you possibly plan it to be a fair system that abides by the law?
You can't. You cannot. No, you
can't.
You can't. And I do have, despite my aforementioned association with the Underlord, I am not saying that I support his actions. What I'm saying is that I do at least know what they mean, that at least in their public facing intent is to focus on people who deliberately leak for money, therefore potentially without necessarily the they've got a real incentive to push stuff out that maybe they otherwise might think better of doing. I haven't finished. Something that could be of like more benefit to our enemies than it is to the public knowledge.
Okay, so we should.
And again,
move
I'm not saying
North
I
Korea
support
because
all this.
You're trusting the state to know what's for public interest and not a journalist whose job it is to know what's in the public interest.
I don't agree with any of this.
They have
I'm not
conflicting priorities.
I'm saying that is. I at least understand that motive. I'm not saying I agree with it. I don't agree with it. I flat out do not agree with any of this. But I do see what they mean in terms of highlighting specific people operating under the name of investigative journalist. I know what they mean by that. And they're really targeting people like Glenn Greenwald.
Yes, however, but people who work as investigative journalists will be trained and know that in some cases you would go to the government. If you had very sensitive information, you would actually go to the government, well, not just for comment, but to find out if it's safe or not. They do have systems in place if it is something that is you feel is in a bit of a grey area and could put someone's life in danger or the country in danger.
They would do that probably themselves with their own in-house experts, because if they went to the government and said, we've got these files, can you just tell us the bits you don't want us to publish? Because even the Snowden leaks had redactions, had things crossed out of them. They went through all of them to highlight, to black out certain things that may relate to, you know, things that they in their editorial judgment and legal judgment, of course, thought is more of a threat being out there than it is a benefit to people knowing. So they do that anyway.
Yeah. And what's your beef?
I don't have beef. I'm for the sake of argument, I'm saying I understand at least why they've singled out investigative journalists. I do not think they should have. I do not think it's a good idea. I don't like any of this. I think it sucks. And I think it flies in the face of journalism, not necessarily for affecting the investigative journalists of today, but putting potential investigative journalists off becoming so because they see it as a trade that is being like restricted or clapped down upon, or they don't want to deal with GCHQ sending SWAT teams to their house for doing their job.
Or to the basement of their newspaper to destroy computers.
Yeah.
But that's what Tim Berners-Lee spoke about after the Snowden leaks, the insidious nature of people self-censoring. Mm. And when you have journalists self-censoring, and they did a report saying a few weeks ago that we covered on the website, where journalists are doing this already all over the world. So when a report like this comes out, what it says for the future of investigative journalism, if you know someone's watching over your shoulder all the time, is a little unnerving, especially in the context of Cameron saying nothing can be encrypted, but oh yeah, freedom of speech, we're with you, France.
But I mean, the whole argument about self-censorship and not doing so, and not saying that it's okay to be spied upon because you've got nothing to hide, which is something that Katie several weeks ago recommended that I read a book about that Glenn Greenwald had written about, which I got, and I watched various TED Talks. And, you know, his argument was that society does not benefit if it allows any kind of invasions of privacy, because it may inhibit you actually doing things that you're entitled to do because you know that maybe it's something that people are watching. And that's getting towards the problem that was documented, obviously, in Orwell's 1984. I still don't 100% agree with what he's saying, but I do believe that there is a middle ground that is much, much closer to him than what I thought perhaps 12 months ago. But I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, the fact that all this is out here is a benefit. I think all this stuff should be discussed and should be out in the public domain to be talked about and to be debated, because we all basically want the same thing. None of us want to be targeted by terrorists. We want to be safe. And, you know, that is what we're all after.
But that's GCHQ's only priority, whereas an investigative journalist priority is that they are varied priorities. Mm.
But also, I suppose the idea is that you don't necessarily want to be persecuted even passively by the fact that people might be watching your emails for the fact that you are doing your job and trying to hold the government to account for its actions and for its decisions and for its secrecy.
Let us know what you think. We've tried to present as many angles as we can here, but there is no right or wrong answer, technically speaking. So let us know your thoughts for next week's show, podcast@wired.co.uk. Well, we've had our eyes like an eagle aimed at Mars and the Beagle this week, because the UK-made Beagle 2 lander has been found on the surface of Mars more than a decade after it was thought to be lost forever, like our feeling of privacy. This launch originally took place in 2003 and was a result of a collaboration of UK academics, and the lander itself rode to the Red Planet aboard the European Space Agency's Mars Express spacecraft, a name I adore. By the 19th of December, it had reached its destination around Mars, and it was released from the spacecraft, except nobody heard from Beagle 2 following its ejection from the Mars Express, like so many people on The X Factor, and it was presumed lost and working in a shop. The team gave up hope of ever actually knowing what happened to the lander, but thanks to NASA's high-resolution imaging science experiment camera, we have found the Beagle 2's final resting place. It did actually make it to Mars, and it even landed where it was meant to.
Yeah, but it didn't deploy properly, I believe.
Yeah,
it
only partially deployed, so yeah, it didn't do very much. But the images captured by NASA over several years, actually, they just had to look at them looking at where the sun was and looking at reflections to verify the shape of all these objects. But they've confirmed the lander's rear cover, what looks like its parachute, and the lander itself, of course. And although there's nothing we can learn from this in as much as it's not doing any work, we do at least know that everything that required it to get to its destination, at least, was probably right. It was a mechanical fault.
It's so sad because there were a number of people that had worked on this for years and years and years, seen it all the way through and like raised the money to see it happen. and they've died like in the last couple of years.
Oh, well, no.
One of the main guys who led this, and who I think he got Blur involved to compose its signal.
Well,
Beagle 2 signal.
That's its problem. He should have picked Oasis. Everyone knew Oasis were better.
Oh my, what? Can't be friends anymore. Good job you're leaving.
They did What's the Story, Morning Glory.
Don't like them. Don't like
Park
them.
Life.
Actually, Park Life was a great album.
It was.
And they went on and on with many other great albums. Anyway, yeah. It's
Country
sad
House.
That not everyone got to see it. But very exciting for the UK that we were right all along. Beagle 2 was amazing.
Yeah. Good one. I'm really excited about this. I always love a good space story. But I like a space story as much as I love seeing dinosaur news.
Yes.
Like, dinosaur news is an oxymoron,
yeah,
in my opinion.
This happened. This is not relevant.
New dinosaur discovered. New dinosaur.
New old dinosaur discovered.
It's just another reason to marvel at the universe when you see a new dinosaur discovery.
Yes.
That was made. That existed. That weird thing with that giant horn in the middle of its face and those spiky bits and those tiny little feet actually existed. No wonder it's extinct.
Yeah, it's a real shame. Katie, according to the Open Data Barometer report from the World Wide Foundation, brilliant names.
World Wide Web Foundation, that is.
Sorry, the World Wide Web Foundation, yes. The UK is like a piece of glass. It is incredibly transparent.
Yes.
When it comes to data, at least. What's this news?
So, well, we're not doing so well in other areas, hence the GCHQ story earlier. We're actually doing quite well in others. So we have come out top in this report that is conducted every year by the World Wide Web Foundation at harnessing open data for social and economic benefit. And that's pretty much one of the only pieces of good news that's come out of this report, which on the whole is not very positive. So it's found that in more than 90% of the 86 countries that were surveyed, data that could be used to beat corruption or improve government services is still kept under lock and key. And even in the G7 countries, which all have pledged to kind of lead the way and signed a charter back in 2013 to make data open by default, even the G7 countries are not really playing their part properly. And the UK has actually been found to be the only G7 country to have an open company registry and only one of two countries to publish land ownership data. Now, Tim Berners-Lee, who is kind of promotes the World Wide Web Foundation and who backed the report, has urged governments to honour their pledges to open up their data in order to put power in the hands of citizens. Now, it seems to me that while many governments are kind of on board with this theoretically, the governments are actually following through and sort of putting the high level political commitment behind it, but also the resources to try and, you know, to really make sure that this data is opened up. There's a definite disparity between the two. And another thing that the report has found is that countries in developing nations actually are showing like massive willing to do this and to open up their data because they tend to be lower down in the rankings.
But is that down to resources?
It's down to resources.
And what's the main benefit of something like that?
Of the
developing nations opening up their data.
So
like why is that a good thing?
Basically, it's the idea is that it can cut down on the amount of government corruption, and
of which there is quite a lot in some of these nations.
Exactly, yeah. It's obviously really great to see that there's a commitment there, that they want to open up their data, and they're saying, yeah, we need to get rid of kind of impunity, and we need to make sure that our citizens kind of know what's going on and have access to all this information in order that, you know, we can make ourselves more open and transparent in our dealings. But they don't necessarily have the funding and the manpower to do this. So what the World Wide Web Foundation is asking more developed countries to do is to firstly give more aid specifically for this, and also increase lending in the hope that we can make all nations more transparent overall, and hopefully get especially the ones that are at the bottom of the rankings to kind of push them up and start to become more transparent in more areas.
But then those countries that are considered developed, G7 nations are still massively failing at this.
Yes. So, I mean, the UK is doing quite well, but yeah, so you know, I think as well the G7 countries really have to take more responsibility for the fact that they promised that they would lead the way in
this. They love signing things.
They do, don't they? let's all get around a table and, you know, eat
environment
some lunch. Tick.
Sign a thing.
Yeah, all great.
Sometimes I think it's easy for us to overlook how many other parts of the world that we don't hear about normally in the same conversation as technology. Mm. It's easy to overlook, actually, how far they have come in terms of internet penetration, mobile communications. I learnt a hell of a lot when Katie spent about a week, wasn't it, in Rwanda. And the amount I learned, I had no idea that they had a pretty well-developed 4G mobile infrastructure in Rwanda.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't associate Rwanda with 4G.
I mean, the downside of that is that it's expensive to use, and actually kind of getting people, it's all very well having the network, but
have you seen EE's prices? It's bloody expensive here.
But you're talking about people who are on like less than a dollar a day.
Yeah,
so, but it's you know, and they are, but they are overcoming their problems in ways that are, they're coming up with homegrown solutions for overcoming their problems like that, which I think is a really important part of it. And I think the World Wide Web Foundation is actually really good at recognizing that it picks out the developed countries that are doing really well, but also then looks at the kind of more emerging markets that are, you know, that are really on the rise, but also the developing countries that are much, much poorer, but who are showing massive willing and massive amounts of improvement as well. So it's really good that we're not just looking at the developed countries at the top and going, oh, look at us, well done again. We're at the top of the rankings.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, you can read the full report that we've got on wired.co.uk if you search for data transparency. That's probably going to bring it up first. But also, if you are interested, incidentally, of having a look at some of the technology coverage we did for what's going on in Rwanda from, it's about a year ago, I think it was March or April last year, wasn't it, when you were over there, go to wired.co.uk, search for Rwanda, and you'll find Katie's reports. There's some really interesting reading there. And let us know, obviously, what you think, as ever, podcast@wired.co.uk. Bad news, smut fans. Sky is now blocking adult websites by default for all broadband customers that have yet to make a decision about whether they want their smut banned. Sky had said that it would send two emails to the customers affected by this new policy, asking them to make a choice of whether they want smut access or not, but would apply parental controls, as they're called, automatically to any customers who ignored the emails or didn't get back in time.
That's me.
Like Liat. Yeah. Imagine Liat being cut off from porn. That's how serious this has become.
I do not remember these emails.
How will you research all of your stories?
At work.
I was going to say, she says that at work. The UK's four biggest ISPs have been forced to introduce web filters after our government kindly demanded the creation of a family-friendly internet. Lol. And Sky said that its customers who visited any websites deemed unsuitable for children under the age of 13 between 5 a.m. and 9 p.m. would see a message asking them to make a choice about web filtering. Now, that bit, I suppose, sounds fairly reasonable, and the account holder can change the parental controls if they request it. But that does mean sort of having to basically say, please give me back access to my smut.
I'm going to do it because they will have blocked me by now.
They will have blocked you by now. You didn't tell them not to block you.
I swear I didn't see these emails. The only email I've noticed from Sky in the past year is, we are charging you yet more money for some service that you've already had
for
the
past
3 years.
I get that on Virgin all the time.
Drives me up the wall.
Anyway, I mean, we've singled out smut because it's a slightly more fun way of talking about this story, but it does block websites. These filters do block websites in 8 categories, and these, aside from pornography, include bullying, suicide, self-harm, file sharing, which I'm a little bit less comfortable with, drugs, and dating. Now, you might think that bullying, suicide, self-harm, and drugs are fair topics to want kids not to have access to, but as we've seen in the past from these filters, sometimes the blocks actually extend to sites that advise what to do if you're being bullied, what happens if you're considering suicide and want help to change how you're thinking.
Yeah,
and
they're not capable of making any differentiation between you know, a Tumblr blog that promotes self-harm and a site for self-help.
It's very, very difficult, and as we've seen time and time again, these filters are never perfect. And I do appreciate that the ISPs are in a very difficult position here. The government has told it has to make it has to do something about this, and they're acting as best as they can. But I think that it's there's still room for improvement. But on the other hand, adoption rates apparently have been very low. Cameron had said that the UK's four major ISPs had to do something by the end of last year, 2014, to ask every household to make a decision about these filters. And in December, TalkTalk confirmed that only 9% of its customers were actually using the filtering system. And they were one of the biggest, at least they had the highest level of adoption. BT, Sky and Virgin adopted these controls in July last year, and these three ISPs had 5%, 8% and only 4% adoption respectively. So not a popular practice.
I do love this because always the chat is, let's empower parents to make these decisions.
Parents
they
don't
have
know
the
this.
Right to control this and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And parents are just like, whatever.
Also,
dump, email, delete, delete, delete. No one's reading it.
I think you're coming back to the point that you made before. I think the amount of websites out there that will have in some way or another a tenuous link to one of these subjects that people are, you know, that the ISPs are supposed to be banning and filtering for. I mean, that's a massive proportion of websites out there. It reminds me of like when I was studying English at school, my English teacher said to me, basically all of literature is about sex. And it's a little bit like that with the internet. No, it's not all about sex, but like there will be tenuous links pretty much all over the internet to these things in one way or another.
Well, when this story was published, someone tweeted straight away from, I don't know, from a website, and I'm not sure if it was gay rights or it was some kind of website that had gay in the title or in their Twitter handle, and he said that they'd been blocked from these filters.
But
you know, instantly someone saying, yeah.
This is what I call suffering. The Scunthorpe problem.
Scunthorpe.
But, I mean, we've seen this happen on Xbox Live as well, where people have had, you know, like Gaylord is a name. In fact, it's a restaurant in London. I think there's two restaurants called Gaylord.
Really?
Yeah.
What cuisine do they serve?
Indian.
Yeah, I think it's Indian. And yeah, it's up near Great Marlborough Street, I think.
Maybe we should check it out.
But yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah, Gaylord. But you can imagine, and this happened, I think, in the past, somebody on Xbox Live had a username, something like Gaylord or something like that. May have very legitimately been their name.
Hmm.
But they can't have that because Gaylord, annoyingly for some people, of course, is a something of a
slur.
A gay slur.
Yeah. Awkward.
Very awkward. But that's what's happening. There's no perfect solution here. And I don't know. I suppose something has to happen. Maybe now this has happened, we have to figure out how to make it better. But either way, if you're affected, you can at least opt out of the filtering software. But if you are on Sky and you've noticed this happening and it's affected your household, yourself, your kids, we'd be very keen to hear from you about how you feel. Like, do you feel you've been cut off unfairly? Has it caused you to have an awkward conversation with your partner or your children? Let us know if you wish to let us talk about it. podcast@wired.co.uk. One last news story, which we're going to do a little quickly because we're about to talk about childbirth, is that apparently, according to Liat, childbirth pain could increase if the mother's partner is present. Now, why is this?
Well,
is this embarrassment?
No, it's not embarrassment. It has a lot to do with how particular women operate in their relationships, how close they feel to their partner or how they perhaps avoid closeness. So it's actually a lot to do with the relationship and people's coping mechanisms. But for a long time, we've assumed that having a partner present, and this is backed up by research, during labour would be beneficial. There are studies that have shown just seeing images of a partner can reduce the sensation of pain. But a team of psychologists from King's College London, UCL and the University of Hertfordshire have done this study with 39 women experiencing some pain, not agony, I'm sure, from a laser pulse to their finger. During the study, their partner was present. It was a partner that they'd been with for more than a year, so someone they've obviously got a very good bond with. And they told the couples that this was a study looking at partner empathy. That was how they basically got the men to be attentive. They'd say, all right, for this section of the study, we're going to measure your empathy. And then for another section, they'd get them to do some tasks. So they'd basically be ignoring their partner. The women had to rate the intensity of the pain, but they also took EEG readings to see if their neural responses, sorry, were mirroring what the women were saying, how much they were feeling the pain. So they got some very interesting results. Aside from being, you know, lasered and asked about it, the women also had to answer a questionnaire about how they seek or avoid closeness in relationships. And they found that the higher a woman scored on the attachment avoidance scale, which is a real thing that has been devised by psychologists over the years, the higher her pain ratings during her partner's presence. And this was all backed up from EEG readings. The women were actually feeling more intense pain when their partners were present if they themselves in a relationship avoided getting attached. And actually one of the authors on the paper, the lead author, Charlotte Crahe, I'm never going to pronounce your name right, she got in touch just before we came on the podcast to explain it thus. She said individuals who are more avoidant of closeness in their relationship prefer to deal with threats such as pain on their own and are less likely to turn to their support network for help. They may therefore not like to depend on their partner. When the partner's present, he may interrupt the person in pain's preferred coping mechanisms, ultimately making the pain worse.
That makes a hell of a lot of sense to me.
Does.
Now, I mean, I am not, well, not presently, science be willing, currently in possession of the biological toolkit with which to produce kin of my own, but I did once notice that when I was having a tooth extracted, I'm not saying that's like the same experience as having a midwife assist with a birth, but a metaphor for both may at least sound fairly similar. I once put headphones in and just listened to music. And it turns out that I felt about 500%, didn't measure that, but I'm guessing it's about that much, more comfortable. I went from being one of the typical sort of squirming, stop, I'm not afraid of it, but I just bloody hate it.
Yeah.
The fact that I could no longer sort of hear the drill and was just focusing on listening to the music, I just laid like a cucumber. They just did what they needed to
do.
They
do that a lot.
I didn't move. I didn't budge. I even found myself tapping the beat on my chest at one point. And that was purely, nothing to do with the pain. It was purely to do with sort of my mental state and admittedly not necessarily hearing the drill as loudly.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that obviously having a tooth removed is anything like giving birth. But in terms of having your own coping mechanism for pain and being aware of your surroundings, either more or less, depending on what's going on, I can sort of appreciate in a diluted form why that sort of thing might make a difference. I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. You might just be like focusing on getting through it and your annoying partner's like, are you okay?
Yeah.
And you're like, shut up!
It's like if I don't know how many people listening are suffering, have suffered panic, like proper full-on panic attacks before, but they are terrifying. And one of the worst things is for someone to look at you concerned to ask if you're all right, because all it does is reinforce that no, you are not all right. Yeah. You're having a panic attack and it feels like you're about to die. And so, you know, maybe along those lines, that's similar too, is that the look of concern in their eyes and sort of reminding you that actually something really uncomfortable or unpleasant is going on.
Well, you don't want to deal with someone else's concerns. You want to just rather than worry about them worrying.
Mm.
I can't work out which would be a better way to be, because obviously it is a good idea to kind of like cultivate that kind of closeness with your partner, where like you can almost share pain sometimes and get through things together. But at the same time, you know, perhaps it's just better to be able to get through stuff on your own. I don't know which would be which.
I don't think it's something you necessarily have to worry about, because of course, for anyone who doesn't know, Katie's boyfriend is my brother, and I'm pretty sure I know that if at such time that was to occur, he'll spend half his time looking at his phone, probably tweeting updates about.
No, he wouldn't.
Well, in
He'd
that case, I'll just
her back.
I'll just learn to get through it on my own. It's fine.
Yeah. Obviously, your opinions on this welcome, and particularly if you've experienced anything like this. Maybe you've had two pregnancies, one with a partner present, one without. Maybe one was significantly better or worse. Let us know, podcast@wired.co.uk. Well, we're going to be back right after a really quick break, when we're going to take a little bit of a diversion from our regular news segments, and we're going to focus on something far more interesting. Me!
Do you want a free audiobook? You probably do, since you're listening to our podcast. Audible.co.uk is offering every listener of the Wired.co.uk podcast any book from its catalogue of 80,000. including the latest science, technology and business releases from best-selling authors, just for trying out its service. A one-month trial of audible.co.uk costs nothing, and whatever book you choose to download is yours to keep, even if you cancel your account. Head to audible.co.uk/wired, where you can sign up in a few seconds to download any book you want. You'll be supporting Nate, Olivia, Liat, and the rest of the wired.co.uk podcast team, and you get a free book in return. Sign up easily now at audible.co.uk/wired. Thanks for supporting the show. That's audible.co.uk/wired.
Welcome back. Now, it wasn't my idea to have a second half special feature about me. You know, my ego and arrogance is, you know, probably up to a certain level, sometimes deliberately so, because it's more fun to listen to, maybe. But this was Katie and Liat's idea, who decided they wanted to do something to do with me and wanted to do a retrospective or something. I thought that would be weird, but I suggested, okay, what about a quiz?
You love the idea. Yeah. Don't lie.
I love how he's like, but let's do a quiz on me. Yeah. Like on Nate.
I wanted to come up with something that might be entertaining. So I thought, well, pitching you two against each other with myself as a subject.
I'm so going to lose. As you've also heard in the previous segment, that Katie is dating your brother. There are things here that she's definitely going to
know. But I think I've known you longer.
I know.
Yeah, that's true.
And I've worked with you for a lot longer than Katie.
Okay. So, well, my failure will just be worse then.
We're going to do a little quiz. And it's on topic, and you're against each other, and the winner gets promoted. I don't know. The winner can have my job. Okay, we're going to start with this quiz. We should probably give this a title. Let's call it, Have I Got Nate For You? Question one. Which phone do I consider the best phone ever made?
Katie! The Nokia 3210!
No, I knew that! That's not fair.
I think that was Katie.
You didn't even say she could answer it yet.
I think it was...
Sorry.
I think that was Katie. 1 point.
No, but... Okay, fine. But I need the answer too. 1 point for me too.
Okay. I'm the quiz master.
That's so unfair. It's like the only one I know.
Fair enough. Have you read these already?
No, but you can't not see the first two.
I name all of my MacBooks after the same character from a popular Japanese anime series. Name that character.
No.
Katie.
That's your name.
Yes, I was. That was me buzzing.
Okay.
Is it?
Go on.
Totoro?
No.
Ah!
The correct answer is Belle Dandy.
Yeah,
from
I didn't know.
Oh
that.
My goddess!
That's
never mind.
Such a good name. I can't believe I didn't know it.
Still one nil to.
Are we supposed to look
Katie.
At these?
No. Okay. Don't look at these. Put your sheets down.
I can't help but see it.
Thank you. Question three. I once had one of my favorite British metal bands photographed for a massive illustration in Wired in the magazine. Which was that band?
Liat.
Go on.
You can tell from my voice that I don't know the answer. I'm just going to name bands that I've heard you talk about. Cradle of
Filth. No, they're my favourite band.
All right, I have no idea then.
They've not been in the mag.
Ooh.
Collins, chance for you to leap in like some sort of predatory force in the quiz field.
Is it the band that has a member of the band is called Nate?
No, that's Finch.
Oh.
No, the correct answer is Tesseract.
Oh, Tesseract.
How did you not know that? Because they're on like every day in the office. Honestly.
Me and Katie drowned that out.
Never mind. Okay, question four. What was the first product I ever gave a perfect 10 out of 10 score to in a wired.co.uk review?
Oh,
actually, Liat, you can go. I never said anyone had to wait till I'd finish the question. Go on, Liat.
I don't know. I know. I'm going to say it's the...
Going to have to hurry you.
Okay.
Gonna have to hurry.
It's gotta
be
the iPhone.
No.
No. Okay, the iPad Mini.
No.
The iPad Air.
Correct. The iPad Air. The iPad Mini. I gave
Apple.
The first one an 8 to, the second one a 9 to, and the most recent one I dropped back to an 8 for value reasons. Obviously, you can find those reviews on wired.co.uk if you search for iPad. Question five: which popular musician did I once interview at her home?
Katie. Imogen Heap.
Correct.
That's an easy one.
The rest of that question was, while she was breastfeeding a baby.
That's a really easy one.
Okay. Question six. There is an enormous gothic-looking statue of a video game character on my desk. Can you A, name that character, and B, name the game it's from?
Katie.
Yes. That's not his name.
I don't know the name of the character.
Okay.
Is the game Elder Scrolls?
Carry on. Yes, it is.
Skyrim.
No.
No. Elder Scrolls.
You can have a
online.
Point.
I think she can
Correct.
Get it for
Elder
being
Scrolls
just
online. Elder Scrolls.
I do know that he has a long spiky tail that's constantly falling on my desk once upon a time.
His name is Molag Bal.
I didn't wait to learn his name. I just threw his tail in the...
But he is from Elder Scrolls Online. Correct, yes. So I've forgotten the score.
Three. Katie's winning.
Katie's got two, I think.
All
maybe
of them. Three.
Well, Katie's three. In the lead. We'll put it that way. Question 7. This is for Liat.
Oh, no.
Katie and I once had to record an episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast from Berlin. Actually, I don't think it was Berlin now, think about it. In my hotel room. What did I use to construct a wall around us to preserve sound quality?
A duvet?
No, but very close. No. No.
Pillows?
No, very close. The answer was a mattress.
How did you do it with the mattress?
I turned
we
a bed
built
on
a
its
fort.
Side. Yeah, it built a sound.
Like a really thin rubbish mattress.
No, proper big, like.
Oh, sorry, I'm pitching you
bed.
Under it, because I know you do it under your duvet.
No, so I do if I'm doing voiceover work.
You just used it as a barrier?
Just used it as a barrier and sat in a corner, yeah. Never mind. No point for you, unfortunately.
Failing.
Katie, your question. For what reason did I once have to re-edit part of one of our podcasts to compensate for... I don't know if I've read this right. Basically, I had to re-edit the show for one of the following reasons. Which was the reason? It was something Liat did. Was it A, she swore several times in a row... Was it B, laughed so loudly it distorted her microphone and made my voice impossible to hear? Or C, referenced pornography law in a way that was completely inappropriate?
Knowing Liat, she's very good at referencing law correctly, so I'm not going to go for that one.
Okay.
I'm going to go for B, the laughter.
Correct.
I would have gone for that too.
It was indeed.
I love your laughter, yeah.
Okay. Question 8. Who do I think is the most unexpected person I once met and told about our podcast?
Oh.
For about a minute.
Oh, Liat.
Yes.
The Queen.
Correct. Okay. I think you might be tied.
I got one point.
No, I think you've got two, technically. I think Katie's still in the lead, though, by one point. Question 9. Technically, I had a slap on the wrist at Wired twice. What two things have I done here that HR might have had a problem with?
There are so many good jokes, but...
Only two of them are true, though, that they know about. No.
Ooh, okay, I could try and guess.
I could try and guess one.
Go on.
Was it something to do with wearing costumes in the office?
Nope.
Okay.
Something to do with having hot tea?
Nope. The correct answers were once sleeping under my desk because I'd stayed so late.
I did know that.
And
that
the other
many
one
years ago.
Was not taking any holiday in a year.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not taking enough holiday in a year, I think.
They just both show how dedicated you've been.
Yeah.
That you haven't been properly naughty, Nate.
That's true, actually.
They were both the year before I began. So yeah. I remember you telling me about that. And
Fair
I was
enough.
Like, you don't take holiday.
I'm taking all of mine.
Last question. Question 10. On a scale of 1 to 10, how uncomfortable did I feel writing these 10 questions about myself to be answered for about 50,000 people to listen to?
Yeah. Katie.
10 being the most uncomfortable.
I'm going to... We should both answer.
I think...
We're both going to go for one.
Yeah, I'm going to go zero.
It's actually not.
No. Well, you're lying.
It's about two. Oh,
okay.
I think Katie technically won that, but it was basically a draw.
Yeah, I'm sorry I cheated on the first question.
You don't win anything, except my thanks for making the last... few years of podcasting an absolute joy.
Aww.
And honestly one of the highlights of my week, particularly because my job doesn't entail a great deal of writing these days because I'm too busy.
Perhaps we win a visit from you in the future. I promise that you'll come back on as a guest.
That is
this year.
Yes, that is a promise.
Okay.
I can do that.
Thanks.
But it has been absolutely amazeballs. It has been fabo. So thank you very much. And thank you to everyone who has listened. Obviously, only good things can come by Liat and Katie taking over the show from next week onwards. So be sure to continue listening. My exodus should not mean the... What could it mean? The death? I won't really die. I just
good
can't
Lord.
Not hear.
The demise.
The demise, yes. Or you can go and find my new podcast on NateLikeson.com.
No, keep listening to
Tune
this one.
In.
You can listen to both. There is no limit on how many podcasts you can subscribe
that's
to.
That's true, yeah. Actually. Yeah, that's true. My new one's quite different. But yes, that is there. This one will continue. The life, you know, the earth will continue turning.
Yes.
It will spin on its axis while one side works, the other relaxes.
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.